They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
You have a problem with it? Build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
All right, joining me now on the podcast, a guy that just completed a very average 17-year career.
Agreed.
His career highlight was playing for Jason Kidd, with Jason Kidd, and making money off Jason Kidd.
Agreed.
He's now in the media world, but on the fringes, and I've agreed to let him join me here on the podcast. Richard Jefferson is here today.
Is this where you like have like a applause track that you guys added?
Okay, we do. It'll be
okay, yeah. There we go.
Reincorporated into the applause track. What's up, man?
Not too much, man. It's crazy that after all of these years, like I've known you, Chris, since pretty much I came into the league.
That's true.
Since my rookie year,
you poured beer over my head.
Yes, I did. Yes. It was weird celebrating in your locker room all the time, but no, it was. As long as we've known each other, I'm finally on the podcast. It only took you 18 years to get me here. 18.
Well, you're a little elusive. I mean, you disappear in the off season. You go gallivanting around the world. You're mostly in Southern California, too.
Yes,
so
that's the only place that matters.
You like
this? This is Southern California.
But see, now you're in New York all the time because you're doing ESPN. You're everywhere. What is your deal? What is going on in the media world of Richard Jefferson?
Okay, so because I'm not a Hall of Famer.
Right. Close, though.
Just in everyone else's mind and mine, because I'm not a Hall of Famer.
Hall of well paid, yes.
Definitely. I got paid. Like people always say, hey, Richard Jefferson's one of the best and not make an All Star game. It's like, guys, it's okay. I got paid like an All Star player.
You did.
Right.
A couple times.
Yeah. Won a championship. I'm fine. But yeah, the All Star game thing pisses me off. But we'll address that another time. Right now, my deal is this. I don't have a deal, you know, so I am the ultimate freelancer. So any dollar that I make is typically me and my agent out there grinding and hustle. So I'm doing Nets games. I'm doing 25 games with the Nets, mostly calling games with Ian Eagle, what a stud, Sarah Kustak, who's amazing. I do like 20 dates with ESPN. I signed on to do like 5 or 6 with Spectrum Sports. And then I'm doing calling 10 dates with the Pac-12.
Okay. See, that's,
I'm not done.
I was just going to say that's a full slate, but you can continue.
Yeah. No. And then we're in the works to doing a road tripping show with Spectrum. So I feel like I'm missing somebody, but we'll just kind of start with that.
So that's based off the road tripping podcast you did with Channing Frye back in the day. It's now expanding. As they do one in Portland.
They're doing one in Portland. They did one in Atlanta last year. Ultimately, our goal is to kind of grow the brand as soon as Bill Simmons stops stealing our shit.
Care to expound on that?
Oh, well, you know what? Yeah. I see people over here shaking their head. No, it's, you know what? Look, this is my thing. And, unfortunately, we're in the process of doing another podcast. So, but no, this is my thing. Look, there's no original idea, right? And I stand by that. And the Ringer tried to get me on. I love Bill Simmons. I think he is the pod father, as they say. Like, he is the guy. Been on his podcast multiple times. Every time I go on there, I have a great time. But, you know, I don't know what the full backstory is, but Kent Bazemore, Mike Muscala, and Annie Finberg did a podcast, did Road Tripping Atlanta. So we're in the process of like, okay, well, look, we got Cleveland again because Channing's doing it in Cleveland. Evan Turner is doing it in Portland. And then we're like, oh, well, what's going on with Atlanta? What's going on with Atlanta? We're not really hearing too much back. And then like a week later, hey, Player to Player podcast hosted with Annie Finberg. And you're like, that looks eerily similar to taking one player off, adding one player. They got the same host, same player. And look, that's part of this business, right? Everyone's kind of a freelancer. But it is weird when it's like you have someone that you consider, you know, I don't want to say an idol, but definitely someone that you respect in the business. And all of a sudden they're kind of poaching on your idea. They're kind of getting it. They've tried to take you away from you. Like, hey, why doesn't Road Tripping come over to Ringer? Mm-hmm. It's like, why don't Ringer come over to Road Tripping? Right. And so, you know, he, you know, whatever happened with the Ringer, they now have, you know, things eerily similar to road tripping. And by eerily similar, I mean pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm. It's weird how the last, like, 10 years, less than that, 5 years, you know, players having their own voice has become so much stronger than it was when you first came into the league, even, you know, 15, 17 years ago. I mean, from the Players Tribune to what you're doing now, it's like the direct-to-consumer market has become in media, too, with athletes.
Well, I think you see it all in, you see it around the world, not just with athletes. I think, you know, he who should not be named, you know, our president, he was the first president to really use Twitter and to use direct to market to, you know, his base. And I think athletes are doing the exact same thing. It's like, I don't need a middleman. I don't need to sit down with Chris Mannix and, you know, and talk to people.
I mean, you kind of do.
I do. That's why I'm here. But no, which you need. I think this right here is a great platform. But I think athletes now with social media and then with, you know, the growth of podcasts, I think gives fans an opportunity to kind of pick and choose like who they want to listen to. You know, it's no different than, you know, Fox News or MSNBC, or, you know, it's like, wait, if I like it this way or if I like it that way, you have your choices.
You're tight with Luke Walton, who is coaching out in LA. I remember I was out at the Laker Heat game last week and Luke was doing some pregame availability. Dwayne Wade walked by, you know, Dwayne class of 2003,
yeah.
LeBron class 2003. Dwayne yells, Luke Walton made the class of 2003 what it is. Coaching ever get into your DNA?
I was really, really close to take an assistant coaching job with the Lakers. You know, I was kind of in between. I had a really crazy summer. So I was kind of in between, like, wanting to play one more year, but having, like, all of these broadcast opportunities, but not one broadcast opportunity where they're like, hey, we want you on a show. You're going to be working 5 days a week. So it was like, okay, either I'm going to grind or I could try and play one more year. And then Luke offered me a position on his staff. And I thought it would be great. Obviously, I thought I could help bridge the relationship with him and Bron. I thought I could help the young guys and also you get to be on the court for one more year. Just even though you're not playing, you'd get to practice, you get to work out with the guys, you'd get to help the young players. And I thought, you know, that would be, you know, fun, mainly because it was, you know, a crew of people that I know. But, you know, I just decided to kind of start this media grind.
Mm-hmm. You know, if I've learned anything from Scalabrine, it's that media is where it's at.
No, it is.
Versus coaching. He's tried both. You know, he was on both sides ever so briefly.
And coaching is tough. And the only reason why I would have coached with Luke is because of the great staff that he's put together. Jesse Mermis, Miles Simon. You know, he just has a really, really good staff. Brian Shaw over there. And then for me, I would have been able to live in home. I would have been, you know, coaching with, you know, someone I respect. I like what they have, a ton of young wings that I felt like, you know, even if I could, you know, contribute a little bit to them. And then obviously Bron being over there and knowing what the type of environment that he likes to create, I thought I could help that. So there was some real serious consideration and, you know, I'm bummed. I got talked out of it multiple times by people that I respect, and it sucked.
Well, I mean, you'd be on the hot seat after like 2 weeks, like Luke was, right?
I mean, No, Luke was never really on the hot seat. I think there were people got antsy, and I think for certain people in this situation, it's new for them. And you know, look, you know, players, owners, general managers, presidents, everyone's experienced everything. Look, I know what it's like to be a 20-point a game scorer in the playoffs and having a ton of media attention. I might not know how to handle media attention. I know how to handle that media attention. I might not know how to handle media attention in another facet of my life, in a personal situation, or, you know, so I think everyone knows that the Lakers bring a lot of attention, and it's now navigating and managing that attention in different spaces. Luke wasn't in the hot seat. People just kind of started that conversation, and
I mean, Magic kind of, you know, by that going that happening, you know, between Magic having a meeting with Luke Walton, basically expressing his displeasure, and then that getting out there.
It's amazing how things got out there. I know, I have a feeling Luke didn't discuss that conversation, but I'll say this. Magic Johnson has one of the easier jobs in the world, in this stands. If Luke isn't doing a good job, the entire world is watching. Everyone is watching and hanging on every single thing that goes on with the Lakers. Everyone, it kind of, I don't want to say backfired, but I felt like the consensus was that people weren't agreeing with Magic when he was kind of stressing about the way the Lakers were. Everyone kind of looked at the situation like, hey, Luke Walton's doing a pretty good job. They're leading the league in fast break points. They're leading in points in the paint. They don't really have much shooting per se, and that was kind of a construct of the team. They didn't have a backup center, so you were playing Kyle Kuzma, second-year player, at the center. You're playing LeBron James at the center. So, look, the construct of the team was more – their struggles were more the construct. And then you add in a suspension to Rondo, a suspension to Ingram, now an injury to Ingram, and you're like, whoa, the Lakers are, with a very tough schedule, are playing good basketball. And then all of a sudden, you see it, the first, what was it? The Lakers, bronze first year, Cavs, bronze first year, and Miami, bronze first year, all started 9-7. So it was like they were all right on par. And what I say this is you have to be careful because now with the amount of media attention that Bron brings, not just the Lakers, but Bron, you look at it and it's like, well, wait a second. You know, there was conversations with Magic that, hey, we're going to start off slow. We got to be patient. And then when that happens, you start to be upset. And then after their a little bit of success, you're like, yeah, well, I knew we were going to start off slow. And it's like, wait. And I've said this. Which one is it? Right? And the Laker fans are intelligent basketball fans. Like, they're base because they've watched a lot of good basketball for 40 years. So you can't tell them one message and think that they won't remember that message that you said 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago. And, you know, I've done enough of media where I not defended, you know, my friend. I defended a basketball mind in Luke Walton where I don't think that there's a lot of people out there that are better equipped to handle this situation, having Phil Jackson, having, you know, Lou Dolson, very same pedigree as Steve Kerr, coaching with Steve Kerr. And I'll stand by this, and someone please prove me wrong, like the two biggest free agent pickups for the Lakers in the last 5, 6, 7 years are LeBron James and Luke Walton. Mm-hmm. Show me a better free agent that they were able to go and bring and help bring their organization to some sort of relevance that's not just based off of their name and history.
Did he seek your advice on how to coach LeBron James? I mean, I know he sought Ty Lue's advice, and he talked to a lot of people, I'm sure Eric Spoelstra, but did he...
Yeah, my advice was never like we see each other a ton. We don't live far from each other, but it was never like, hey, how do you coach Bron? And you can, it's more of just kind of understanding him as a person and him as a player. But, you know, Bron was who he's always been. He was there months early, working out, training, getting guys together, playing pickup, you know, so you're able as a coach to kind of sit back and watch him without actually coaching. So in the preseason and pickup games, you're not coaching, but you can see. And I think for him, it's still more about coaching these young guys. It's still more about coaching Kuzma and coaching Ingram and Coach Hart and Lonzo Ball. That's where he's got to work and help coach these guys to get to a higher level to more meet Bron, right? And that's not saying that these guys won't be there, but it's like, dude, it's tough to do that in your first, second, third year to have the best player in the world come in and who's an extreme competitor and having to understand that mistakes in the first quarter mean almost as much as they do in the fourth and third. And so I think, you know, his focus is still getting the young players better.
Do you read anything into, like, Brian Windhorst reported, like, about a few weeks ago that, you know, LeBron was blowing off play calls and just running his own stuff there? Do you read anything into that?
Well, you know, I have a lot of respect for the work that Windhorst puts in, but, you know, as a player, he's got to understand some certain instances. And it's like, that'll be headline bait where, oh, Bron is changing calls. And it's like, look, Jason Kidd used to change calls all the time. So Jason Kidd would... You know, let's say you'd run one play, right? And, you know, you would have like three different reads, very similar to a quarterback. And it was like, oh, we got the three this time. Oh, okay. Then the next time the guy is staying home to the three to the three point shooter. So then the next time you hit the roll, right? So you hit the rolling, and all of a sudden the coach will call another play, and Jason Kidd will be like, no, I got it. And he's like, Richard, you've been on that weak side doing nothing. Get ready to cut back door. Just cut back door really quickly, and I'm going to throw it up. And all of a sudden you would score three times in a row on the exact same play. And so, like, those are the type of things that happen on the basketball court where a coach will be like, hey, let's run fist ups. Like, no, I got this, right? And they always say, like, great players show coaches how to coach. And I'm not saying that, you know, there's any dispute there, but it's more of like, hey, look, that is accurate. But players do that all the time. Kyle Lowry will do that. You'll see Russell Westbrook do that, where it's like, hey, I see something. I'm reading something. Coaches are watching the game. They're watching defense. They're watching this, where like a point guard or a playmaker is kind of watching the flow of the game and looking at different reactions. So I just don't buy into all of that stuff. And unfortunately, that's just kind of the way it works.
Are they where you thought they would be as we sit here talking mid-December?
Yeah, I do. I find it absurd a little that you look at teams like a Houston, you look at teams like a San Antonio that are really struggling with far more talent than the Lakers have. And, you know, Luke's on the hot seat. And it's like, well, okay. And again, I don't think that Luke is on the hot seat. I just think the Laker organization is trying to navigate this newfound, you know, jewel in LeBron, this newfound attention that has come, and trying to figure out what their realistic expectations are. I just find that it's fun to watch kind of the bubble. It sucks. But, you know, I always joke with Luke about, I don't know, what did he sign, like a $25 million coaching contract? I was like, dude, you didn't get paid $25 million to coach Ingram and to coach Ball. Yeah, you got paid that to develop them. You got paid a lot of money to coach high-level talent when it does come and to help attract high-level talent. So right now he's earning his money.
All right, we'll get back to my conversation with Richard Jefferson in a minute. But first, I have to tell you about a great new offer from my friends over at Quicken Loans. Support for the Crossover NBA podcast comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. Let's talk about buying a home. It can be one of the most important purchases that you will ever make. But today's fluctuating interest rates can leave you with unexpected higher payments, which can turn a great experience into an anxious one. That's why Quicken Loans created their exclusive power buying process. Here's how it works. They check your income, assets, and credit to give you a verified approval. This gives you the strength of a cash buyer, making your offer more attractive to sellers. Once verified, you qualify for their exclusive Rate Shield approval. They'll lock in your interest rate for up to 90 days while you shop for your new home. Then, once you've found the one, if rates have gone up, your rate stays the same. But if rates have gone down, you get to keep the new lower rate. Either way, you win. It's the kind of thinking you'd expect from America's largest mortgage lender. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/Mannix. That's rocketmortgage.com/Mannix. Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-day purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org number 3030.
What did you make of the narrative that was out there? And I think it was based off the Rick Bucher story in Bleacher Report about how guys don't necessarily want to play with LeBron James, in part because of all the everything that comes with it off the court. You know,
well, I think that a lot of that was kind of with KD and right. You know, some of him talking about that toxic. And there's been so much media conversation about that. It's not for everybody, man. It's like, look, yeah, it is intense to play with Bron. The man played in 8 straight finals. So go back and look in the last 8 straight years. Is it fun? Is it fun to, you know, have that stress? It was stressful for me, for my own wants and needs and trying to win a championship. It was stressful. And look, like, was it stressful playing with Kobe? Was it stressful playing with Michael Jordan? Was it stressful playing with Magic? Show me one great player that was trying to win a championship every single year and show me what place isn't stressful. Show me that in history. Like, the Golden State Warriors are an anomaly, right? And even them, they've had their ups and downs and this and that, but a lot of it is predicated on their best player, Steph, and, you know, and KD. Let's say their best player is KD. Their most important player is Steph.
Great.
So you look at it as like, oh, okay, well, they've created a pretty good environment. I don't think it's toxic. It isn't toxic. I just think some people struggle to understand the type of media attention that comes with basically being one of the most famous basketball players on the planet at 15, right? Like, that comes with a lot, and kudos to Bron and his team for how they've handled it.
That said, you know, LeBron plays in Los Angeles for the Lakers. He is still playing at a high enough level. If Lakers go into free agency next summer and Klay says no and Durant says no and Kawhi says no and Jimmy Butler says no, would that reflect poorly on LeBron?
I don't think so. I think, because if you look at the situations and the way that the salary cap is structured, if some of these guys wanted to kind of build their own legacy, and this is one of the things that I've said, it's like, you know, for some guys that might want the ball in their own hands, and Jimmy Butler, the reason why they wouldn't have the ball in their hands is because they wouldn't be the best player. So if Jimmy Butler if Jimmy Butler didn't want to go to LA, if Kawhi Leonard didn't want to go to LA, it's because they wanted the ball in their hands, right? And they know that if they're on that team, not the media attention doesn't affect the game. The best player in the world affects the game. And so in that sense, show me one team that Bron would be on that he wouldn't be the best player. Mm-hmm. Show me one team in the last however many years.
And how long can that continue to? I mean, he's going to 35 minutes a game again.
His numbers, his minutes are down.
But
you understand, the cumulative effect for an individual like that will allow him to be fresher later in the season. And also, if this isn't a championship year, it would allow for him to, quote unquote, rest, you know, and understand, look, if you take 3 minutes off, you take 3 minutes off of a person's games, over a 10-game span, that's 30 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. That's one less game, just 10 games. So if you do that over 80 games, you take off a person's three minutes, how many games is that? It's eight total games. Yeah. About eight total games that a person is playing less than in the season. Isn't that crazy?
One of the things I'm wondering is, why hasn't he taken any games off so far this season?
Well, they're not in a position to do that. And he played 82 games last year, and they're not in a position. Now, again, if they had a buffer, if there was a back-to-back situation, but I think if you take off some of his minutes, and again, this is a compliment to Coach Walton. I brought up this point. You know, I haven't watched too many of the games. They had a – when is this airing?
Tuesday.
Okay, so they got blasted by Washington last night. So we'll date this a little bit. But about 2 weeks ago, they played Dallas Mavericks. Right, they were down 13 in the first quarter. They grinded it out, got it done, came back and won in the fourth quarter pretty handily. Bron had 28 points in 31 minutes. Right now, I've been places and seen places where if the team's down 13 and you got to beat Dallas, all of a sudden, Bron, you're just going to play the whole game, right? But for a coach, if, you know, quote unquote hot seat, why would you still only play Bron 31 minutes in that moment? It's because you're sticking to your guns. Mm-hmm. And if none of those guys, if none of those free agents decide to come to LA, then it becomes even more important to develop your young talent. It becomes even more important to develop Kuzma and Ingram and Harp and Ball, because those guys are going to be your future. So you got to make sure that you have a coach that is also has the ability not only to manage high-level talent, but also to develop young guys, because it's not guaranteed. Make no mistake, we can talk about free agents, but Bron went there because Bron wanted to go to L.A. Mm-hmm. Didn't matter who the coach was. Didn't matter who the GM was or who the president was. Bron wanted Los Angeles, the market. And that's not always the case. And Paul George didn't even take a meeting, right? And that's been kind of swept under the rug because LeBron James has kind of – it was like, well, he's the main person we wanted anyway. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when a player like that doesn't take a meeting, that didn't reflect on Bron. That reflected on Magic and Rob Pelinka and the ownership. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Magic and Rob have to take some responsibility for bringing in free agents too.
And I'm glad you brought up Paul George, because it brings me to the topic I wanted to get to, which is Kawhi Leonard and how they're playing right now in Toronto. It's great basketball.
I mean,
they're playing great. Kawhi's playing close to the level he had when he was in San Antonio. And, you know, people like to compare the Paul George situation with Kawhi Leonard. Granted, they're two different people. I mean, Paul George, laid-back guy, bonded with Russell Westbrook. But one of the things Oklahoma City did was a season-long recruiting of Paul George, basically selling him on the franchise and the future of the franchise. I would imagine that's exactly what's going on with the Raptors right now, with Masai Ujiri, with Nick Nurse, with people inside that organization selling Kawhi Leonard on being part of that team long term.
Yeah, and I think that's great. And I think that was a mistake that the Lakers made. I think that the Lakers had an opportunity to get Paul George. They didn't want to give up assets because they did that quote unquote arrogance thing where they're like, oh, well, he's going to come to us in free agency. And it's like, guys, Like, no, he's not, right? And it's like, dude, when you get a chance to get an all-NBA player in his prime, you give up the assets that you feel like you can give up. And they chose not to. And a year-long recruiting, a year-long bit of recruiting made him stay. Now, there's some money issues there that helped him want to stay there. And look, I got a lot of heat most recently because I said that KD is or Kawhi Leonard is great, but he's not KD or LeBron great. Now, he definitely didn't hear me. I'm not going to be that arrogant, but I will say he's been playing at an MVP level all year long, right? Like him, Giannis would probably be. I know people are trying to make the MVP case for Steph because he was gone, or when he was here, they were playing great. He was gone, they didn't. So it looks like he's the most valuable player
right.
from that standpoint, not necessarily statistics. But I'll say this, in my opinion, I would say Kawhi and Giannis are probably leading right now for the MVP, right? And I'll still stick by my assessment. I don't think that Kawhi is a generational player, right? A once in a generation or once. I think he's a great player, most likely if he continues down this path, a future Hall of Famer. But I wouldn't put him in a Kevin Durant or in a LeBron James class, even if he were to win an MVP. And one of the reasons why is I'll kind of point to James Harden, how special he's been for the last pretty much his whole career, mm-hmm. but just most recently in this little bitty block of 3 to 4 years where he's been MVP, 60-point triple doubles, all this, and all of a sudden his team is off to this like really kind of sluggish start, and Carmelo's gone, and you can't blame him, and people are trying to figure out what's going on in Houston and why they've grossly underachieved. It takes something special to do this type of play for a decade, for 12 years, for 13 years. Like every year you're an all-star. Every year you're an all-NBA player. Every year you're an MVP candidate. So, and I think that's what KD and Bron, like those are the type of guys that are always there. And I don't know if Kawhi is there yet. I don't know if Giannis is there yet. But Kawhi and Giannis probably would be the favorites for MVP.
Everybody's different, but you're a Southern California guy, like Kawhi Leonard is, and people make a big deal about the weather in Toronto. You signed a long-term deal in Jersey. I mean, for players, and I know understanding everybody's different, but for players, how significant is location and climate and things like that?
Well, it's important, but I think you want to look at a player like DeMar DeRozan, who instead of going to L.A.
Compton, California,
L.A. guy, Kobe disciple, right? Like, just a great, great player. All of a sudden, he
Didn't take a meeting either.
Was like, no, because that money was too great. And part of the reason why you take the money is because, look, if he didn't take the money, right, he would have taken less money or whatever. But he took the money, and then he gets traded. Right, that's why you always do that. You can take out your phone. I'm not one of those people.
It was gonna vibrate on the table.
Were you? No, yeah. You can. No, take good. It. You're fine. You can take out your phone.
It was in my pocket. It was uncomfortable. I'm wearing suit pants.
Dude, he tried to do it so slick. Like he brought it out like slow.
Uncomfortable, so I took it out of my pocket. Was gonna put it on the table, but then I realized if it vibrated, it would mess up the podcast. Now we're messing up the podcast.
No, we're not messing up the podcast. This is the podcast.
This is the podcast. I'm gonna just like go right there.
Yeah, just put it. You can actually put it face up. I will not be offended. Right?
Okay. It's Kawhi calling to say. Is RJ talking shit about me?
Yeah, well, yes. Yeah, he knows the answers. Yeah, but it's no. I have so much respect for Kawhi, but you know, it is. It is the location is important, but I think now guys have seen that they can build a brand in pretty much any city. Mm-hmm. I think when you are in Canada, like it's not just Toronto; it's the country of Canada that is probably doing some sort of recruitment for Kawhi, because you know there is no more Vancouver. It is just Toronto representing, and they're a great representative for the game of basketball, right? They're one of the best one of the best organizations in the NBA. They've been that way for a lot of years.
Is that believed amongst players?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It is a very, now there are some extra things that you got to deal with when you go, you know, customs all the time and the travel, and there's a little bit more of a grind, but Toronto's a great city. It is a great city. Anybody in this NBA will say that at least it's in your top six. For me, it's in my top four or five, right? New York, LA, I love Chicago, and I love Toronto. Like, if I had to pick a place to go there for 2 or 3 days, eat the food, hang out with the people, go to a game, Toronto is one of those places, Chicago, LA, and New York. Do you cuss on this podcast?
Yes.
Yeah, actually. Fuck Boston. Fuck Boston. Okay. That's not one of my places. That's, yeah, that's
it
definitely,
should be. It
definitely
should be.
Not on my list.
It should be high. It should be number one on your list.
No, like, shit, no. There's no chance.
Legal seafood. It's great. Yeah. Also, it's a good stuff in Boston. What I think is a good selling point for Kawhi in Toronto is the bench guys,
yeah.
young guys. These are all like, and I would imagine if you're Kawhi looking at basketball options, you've got the Van Vliets and the Siakams and OG Anunoby. These guys are in their early 20s who you can grow with, who are yeah. not going to be, these aren't mercenaries that you're, or even young guys who are unproven. These are guys that have shown as second unit guys, even spot starters, they can be among the best in the league. I think that's almost the biggest selling point.
I would agree. Like they're talent, but is that their young guys better than the Lakers' young guys?
No. But I'm more speaking of second unit type of guys there. I mean, the starting lineup. I mean, I guess Siakam is in and out of that starting lineup. No, they're not. You're right. But I mean, I don't even put honestly. I think it's more the Clippers and the Raptors than it is the Lakers.
And look. To quote one of your Boston idiots, yeah. Paul Pierce. No, nice. I'm just kidding, Paul. What's up, Paul? Yeah, Paul. But he said
Paul's
it. What was it either Paul or Chauncey said it? Look, the Clippers.
Former Celtic.
Yeah, kind of. Look. Either you could go the Clippers could go 82-0, and it's still going to be a Laker town.
Yes.
Don't ever forget that.
Agreed.
Make no mistake. If you just want to go to LA for the weather, that's fine. But that's all you're getting. Right, that's all you're going to get is you're going to get the weather. Mm-hmm. You might get the attention and you're going to get sellout crowds, but at the end of the day, it is still a Laker town. That's it. That's just the reality of the situation, right? And so it doesn't matter what the White Sox do. It's still a Cubs town.
Yeah.
That's just true. And so that doesn't mean that the Clipper organization isn't a great organization. They're Blake Griffin and Chris Paul, and you know, they've had some quality players, and they're definitely not what they were 20 years ago where they were just, you know, a tragic sports organization. I think Ballmer's done a great job. I think they have some good pieces. Doc Rivers has proven that he's not just a level of talent. Like he's doing a very, very good job. I think he could be up there for Coach of the Year with mm-hmm. what the Clippers have accomplished this year.
Jerry West in that mix too, probably.
Yeah, has. 100%. And so it's like the culture there has changed. So that's a compliment to them. But they know the truth. Mm-hmm. They know the truth that this is the Lakers, and that's why I think Doc Rivers did a great job of covering up all those banners when he first came in there. That was the first thing. He didn't need the Clippers players to see all that stuff. But part of the reason why you got to cover it up is because you just don't want to be reminded of it.
All right, put it this way then. I asked you a similar question a few minutes ago. If Kawhi wound up choosing the Clippers over the Lakers, would that reflect poorly on LeBron James?
No, because I think that's a reflection of Kawhi. That's a reflection of Kawhi.
That he would want his own team?
That he would want his own team. That he would.
I think there's truth to that, too. That's why, like, the Durant stuff, I never believed Durant and never do believe Durant's going to go to the Lakers, mostly because when you reach a level that Durant's at, I don't think you want to help another guy win a championship. I think you want to eclipse him in championships.
Yeah.
I think that's part of it.
And that's the thing. And there's been a lot of talk about, hey, you know, no matter what Kawhi does or what KD does, he'll never eclipse LeBron, right? And I think you look at Kawhi or KD has never been more successful than he has been in the last 2 years, 2.5 years. Never been more successful. He is on the best team. He's winning finals MVP. They are cruising through. They were Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Year, which I think was stupid.
Sports team, persons.
Is that at plural?
I think we still just go singular. Sports person of the year, yes.
Yeah, so the team was
the person. None of them showed up at the party. That was disappointing.
Okay, whatever. None of them showed up at the party?
It's in Los
Angeles. Shouldn't give an award. Give me the award. I'll make sure it's a hell of a party.
What should we give you the award for?
It's not about the award. It's about the party.
Oh,
right? I would make sure that the party.
You want to go to catering?
Wait a second. You've been to my parties.
I may have partaken in my youth.
What do you think about it?
Yes, solid.
Okay,
solid.
Fair.
Well done.
So, but he's never come across, KD has never come across more sensitive than he has been in the last 2 years. That's weird. Like the trolling, the arguments, the technicals, the comments about so many other people. That's not the same KD we saw when he won the MVP in Oklahoma City. It's completely different. But I think a lot of that sensitivity is, I think, because it's still LeBron's league. It's still LeBron's league. Win or lose, it's still his league. And I think that's what he's talking about, toxic. I think that's where he's like, yo, well, wait, I'm doing all this and you guys aren't paying attention to me, or you guys are only want to talk about me negatively. Oh, see, you guys are just fanboys. See, that's that fanboy stuff to everybody, LeBron. Nobody wants to play with all that toxic environment. Come on, man. That's not true.
Last question on the Raptors. Why is Kyle Lowry still pissed?
What about what?
I mean, he just seems like, you saw that interview you did with Rachel, where he was still pissed at Masai Ujiri, for trading DeMar DeRozan. I think even though they're better, like, no, they're unquestionably a better team.
Well, and I think it's not professionally and there's personally and there's emotionally. There's a lot of different things that go into it. But I think for him, there's like, okay, well, I can never trust you. I can never trust a word that comes out of your mouth again.
Is that fair, though?
That is fair because communication is key, right? And even if it's like a day or two before, like, hey, listen, I just want to let you know. Like, this is what's going on. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to do that. You don't have to do that because ultimately GMs last longer than players. Owners last longer than players. So, like, there's a level of, hey, I'll survive this, right? As players, we always got to kind of keep that guard up and stay ready, right? You got to sleep with one eye open. Do I think he should walk around with resentment? No, because this is about basketball. But I can see that there's a level of trust that can probably never be regained there, right? It's like when I don't know what Kyle Lowry's contract situation is, but let's say he was up this summer. It's like, hey, you're the future of our program. We want you to be our point guard for the next 5 years. What do you do if you're Kyle Lowry and you're sitting across from Masai and he's saying these words to you? We want you to take a discount. We, you know, so we can bring in some other free agents to help us win a championship. So take a discount so we can. What do you look at a man like that and say?
That's tough.
That's tough. And that's what I'm saying. So, but also let's talk about Kyle Lowry as a player. He's a chip on his shoulder type of player, right? He always plays with this kind of like, I've got something to prove. That's why he is who he is. That's why he's been as successful. That means even when they were making playoff runs and he was struggling to shoot the ball, he just kept going and kept grinding and kept grinding. A lot of it had to do with just that. That's who he is. So to see him carry that on a personal side, that's not surprising.
Yeah. I mean, he's got to know that. I mean, right now, I mean, we can talk about where Boston is, but Toronto, if they maintain home court advantage, they're the favorite to come out of the East.
Yeah, favorite. And my thing is this, I always do this, right? If everyone plays their best basketball, who can win? Like, that's the first thing that has to go into the equation, right? Let's say everyone is healthy and all teams are clicking on, let's say, 4 out of 5 cylinders, right?
Right.
Who's the best team?
Boston.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Who's the second best team?
I'd say Toronto.
You put
Milwaukee?
It would be really close between Milwaukee and Philly. Right now, Philly's got some things they got to figure out, right? Yeah. When you start to hear, and again, let's take out KD and Kawhi and LeBron. Let's look at the Jimmy Butler situation with Embiid, right? All of a sudden, Embiid is like, well, I haven't been myself, and I haven't been this, and, you know, I got to figure out a way. I guess I'm just a stretch five. And it's like, wait a second. You guys were kind of not playing great against the top level, right? Like, you were talking about that. He was talking about Boston, and every time they play Boston, it's like, well, look, we're going to go get a player. But in order to be where we want to be and get where we're going to get, everyone's got to make a sacrifice. You might not average 30. You might only average 23. Can you make that sacrifice, Joel Embiid?
Should now. He got paid already, too. Well,
but that's the thing. It there's an ego standpoint, yeah. Right? So it's like the same thing. It's like Kawhi. You want to go live in L.A. and play? Well, you're going to have to sacrifice a little bit. Mm-hmm. Instead of averaging 28 points a game, you're going to have to average 22 points a game to go play and win a championship and compete. Are you willing to make that sacrifice?
I mean, Boston's dealing with that right now.
Yeah, all these guys are back, and everyone's trying to figure it out, and Brad Stevens is trying to figure it out.
They never should have started all 5 of those guys to open the season. I thought that was kind of a cop-out and an ego playing to the egos of those players. Like, they were all starters. A bunch of them were on those conference finals teams. You have to make Terry Rozier sacrifice anyway, so we're going to put these 5 guys out there. When really, and I've said this before, that lineup should have been more strategic.
I thought that lineup, if they could really lock it in with Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Kyrie Irving, Gordon Hayward, and Al Horford, that's a fucking monster lineup.
Yeah.
That's a really...
I think it's more of a death lineup, though, like Golden State.
I agreed. But it's like, who do you ask? Like there was a reason that you were going... Like, look, I love Andre. Andre's Arizona guy. That's mm-hmm. my guy. Like Gordon Hayward in his prime was better than Andre Iguodala in a different way. In a mm-hmm. different way. I love the way Andre controls a game in his prime and the way he can distribute the ball and kind of be a playmaker. But Gordon Hayward is very good. Now, he's still getting to that level, but I think it's best. I think the best thing, and we'll disagree on this, put all of them out there. Let them sink or swim, and then we can make adjustments throughout the season. But when you don't do that, now you worry about an ego stewing on the bench. Mm-hmm. Now you send Gordon Hayward to the bench. He understands why he's on the bench. he understands, like, okay, look, I haven't played well. I'm still getting my rhythm. Let me go out there and kind of work against second unit guys. There's not as much pressure on me. I can understand that. And now they have a reason. But when you just say, hey, look, we're going to go with Wentworth last year. Gordon, you're going to sit on the bench, even though, you know, the last time you were healthy, you were an all-star and borderline all-NBA player. You know, you're going to sit on the bench. And he's going to just be stewing the whole time. So I don't mind letting people fail or letting a situation fail. And because now people don't question them trying to make moves and change and tweak things. Had he kind of done that and they got off to a slow start, immediately it would have been like, well, why aren't you starting Gordon Hayward? When is Gordon Hayward going to start? Right, so that's the only excuse that I would kind of make for.
How long though? Do you say let him sink or swim? You know, how long? I mean, they did like for like almost a month. They were putting him out there, and they were struggling as a unit together because. And I watched a lot of their games. It was a lot of your turn, my turn out there, and that doesn't. That's not how you play. So you can't succeed that way.
No, and that's not Brad Stevens basketball. No. That hasn't been the success of Celtics basketball. But I think for them, you know, understanding the best way to play, and it's like, dude, guys, there's not. It's going to be a 20-point a game score every now and then, right? Like, if you want to play the best version of basketball, no one on that team would probably average over. I don't know what Kyrie's averaging, probably, what, 22 or something?
Like 22.
No one's going to average 25 on that team. And there's going to be nights. And look, Kyrie is a point guard, but he's a scoring point guard. He's not even a let me go get 10 assists and then let me go get 25 points. Or once I got my 25, I'm just going to distribute. Kyrie has that kind of killer mentality on at all times. And so you need someone else that's going to be out there distributing the ball. And you even look at Golden State, like their success, a lot of it is when Steph is off the ball. It's not when Steph is just like out there trying to score and trying to create for people. It's when Andre's handling the ball, Livingston's handling the ball, and those guys can kind of run free. I think a month is not long in the NBA, especially in the Eastern Conference. You're never going to get to something so far away that like, oh, wow, we need to figure this out or we're not going to make the playoffs. I think that team is super, super talented, and I think all things being equal, if everyone's playing their best brand of basketball, I do think Boston's the favorite.
How would you describe, I mean, you play with Kyrie Irving, and I've tried to get to know him a little bit in the time in Boston. He's a tough nut to crack. Like, he's just kind of in his own world.
Oh, he's an introvert in that standpoint. He's a very charismatic kid. Very, very, you know, a very sweet kid. Really, really good dude. He, a lot of times, even as a teammate, you're trying to figure out what's going on in his head. But, I you know, everyone's different. That's the thing. It's like, a lot of times people get superstars and they fit inside this mold. Either they're Tim Duncan and they're quiet. They're funny and charismatic like a Joel Embiid. They're quiet like a Kawhi. They're everywhere like a Steph, KD, and Bron. Sometimes there are superstars that just kind of fit in even in a different kind of, you know, lane than those two or three that we've kind of like built in. Like, okay, he's like Tim Duncan, Kawhi. He's kind of quiet and reserved, like a John Stockton type, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, they're out there like Magic Johnson and everywhere. I think Kyrie, even with all that, is kind of in his own lane.
Yeah. I know why you hate Boston. It's this home of the greatest comeback in NBA playoff history at that time.
At that time, yes, it was.
26.
Yeah, I, you know, we still won the series. So
yeah,
it's
that
like,
doesn't matter. It's more about the history of
the history
coming
of,
back, that moment. Like,
yeah, you know what?
Like, if you had beaten the Lakers that year, then maybe it would have been, you know.
That one hurt a little bit. Yeah. No, I have a lot of respect for the Boston fans. Like, to me, there's only certain places that you don't want to play, right? Like, you legitimately don't want to play in the playoffs. And I would say the Boston fan base is, give me another one. I'm trying to think of like two or three in basketball.
I mean, the Garden in New York,
no,
I think.
No.
Oklahoma City strong. Utah
strong. Oklahoma City strong, but Golden State has become a little bit more corporate in the years.
A lot of money for those seats now.
Agreed. But that's what I'm saying. Like that first championship year and then the 73 win team, those places were really still fan based.
Wait to see how much the Chase Center probably charges for seats.
Yeah, but they're gonna lose some of that aura. It's gonna be a beautiful place, it's gonna be awesome, but they're gonna lose some of the aura. Like, let's just be honest. There's a reason why the Knicks will only play in the Madison Square Garden because there's an aura. I don't know. I just think that Boston fans, because say whatever you want, they drink, they party, they get after it. Like after that after that comeback, I'll never forget. We were coming out of the arena down that terrible ramp, and the bus and all those like bars and restaurants, it looked like there was a parade going on. People were jumping on cars. Everyone was either flooded on the streets or coming out of the arena, and they were cheering. They were going nuts. And it's like, yo, it's game three of the playoffs. Like, what's going on? And it was just, that's a compliment to them. They get after it. And there's like, they were throwing pennies at us. They were chanting some pretty obscene things.
Sounds right.
Right. And so it's like, yo, look, if I got to go win a game.
And that was just me and my brother.
Exactly. And you guys were working for the Celtics. It's like, wait, that's not allowed.
They're employed at the time. Yeah, that's not allowed. Just the two of us.
No, but the Boston fans are. They're one of the places that you probably don't want to play, hence why they are so successful in playoffs and game sevens, because like if they're at home in a game seven, those fans, they typically have vodka with their orange juice, right? Like they wake up ready to go.
It's more, you know, they do need that home court.
Like what's so funny?
Producers, he's enjoying me getting, you know, bitched out a little bit there.
Okay.
But they do need that home court, because they might have lost to Milwaukee first round last year if that game seven wasn't at home. 2 years ago, Washington, they probably would have lost that game seven if it wasn't at home. That home court's fine. Every time they go to Toronto in the last couple of years, they get their ass kicked. Like, bad.
Well,
another place. Toronto, great place.
Toronto, and this is what I say, and this is, again, there's so many different like little nuances when you start to talk about home crowds and home places. Like Cleveland. Cleveland's always been a pretty good place to play, right? Like at home, the crowd is great, but there's an element in Toronto, there's an element of the city. The city's great. The people are great. It's fun to go out. You know, if you're a young guy, there's beautiful women. If you're single, like, it's just a very friendly, entertaining town. You have those kind of like those kind of traps out there. Boston, not so much. I'm not saying Boston's not a great town. It doesn't have all those elements. But guys know, like, hey, if I'm wearing an opposing team's gear or these fans know who I am, it's probably not a smart idea for me to just be roaming around Boston at 12 o'clock at night. Am I lying?
No, you're not lying.
That's a legitimate thing.
I think Julie Okafor got in trouble with some of that.
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. Like, and look, I was there. So I was 21. Like, I used to go up to Assumption College. I had a bunch of buddies that were going to school.
Of course you did.
Yeah,
so
my buddies would pick me up from they would drive down from Assumption, go to the game, pick me up. I'd leave the arena, drive down to Worcester. Is it Worcester? How do you say it?
It's Worcester.
Yeah, so drive down to Worcester.
You went all the way to Worcester? I mean, that's
I'm only 21, so fair. I was going to college, but my buddies that like I grew up in high school with were going to college there. Pick me up. We would drink all night, party, and then they would drive me back in at like 7 a.m. So I would go be ready for like the 11 a.m. film session.
Yeah.
But I was the seventh man having fun. But one day I was like, yo, guys, I can't drive up to Assumption. Just stay down here and we'll party. And so they stayed down there and we were going out, and I'll never forget this. Like, people were going crazy, and like some girl was talking to me, some guy was talking shit, and it was kind of chaotic. And this cop was like, hey, you get out of here. You're a fucking target. Get out of here. You're a fucking target. Just leave. And I'm just sitting there like, I don't want no problems. And he was like, it doesn't matter. You're a target. There's tons of drunk people. You're in the middle of the playoffs. Get the hell out of here. It's not like that in Toronto.
No.
It's not like that in Cleveland. It's not like that in a lot of cities. And so that home court advantage is pretty intense.
The hostility of the Boston fan base.
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to like that. RJ, thanks for stopping by here, man. Really appreciate it. Keep up the great work. ESPN, Yes Network, Pac-12 Network. You got a whole smorgasbord of jobs out there.
Yeah, man. I just want one job in one place. Like, I'm going 3,000 miles like every time. Like, I'm doing shit that's absurd.
Do you miss the private flights there?
Oh, 100%. Like, my wife's like, oh, well, you fly first class. And it's just like, no, that's not. No, it's like,
I got to go through security.
I got to go 2 hours, and I got the TSA. I got all the, but it's like 2 hours early. My flight got delayed 3 hours. I land, and I have to go someplace else. And I'm doing stuff like kind of because I'm a masochist. Like, I love the pain. But it's like I'm doing like a get up in the morning, doing the Nets game that night, catching a 6 a.m. flight to fly back to California, and then I'm calling a Pac-12 game that night. Like, that's just stupid.
You got to do it first. One of these days, you'll get that deal.
No, I know. And look, man, one thing.
You like Scal.
We've known each other a long time, and you've seen my kind of growth as a player and as a person. And, you know, I have no problem putting the work in. Putting the work in and then seeing the reward, that is the best thing in the world. I'd much rather have that than, and so I could tell someone what I did 10 years from now to get to that spot.
Mm. Well, enjoy the first class seat.
Here we go.
A lot of people. I'm sure you'll be in the lounge later.
Well, understand this. I'm 6'7", 238 pounds. So a first class seat to me is basically like an economy seat for you.
Okay. I'm 6'3". It's not that much shorter.
But you're more torso heavy. So you more have a long torso. You're a narrow, skinny legged, long torso guy.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that I've been.
I'm just giving all the people out there, just kind of a visual.
Yes. In case you haven't seen me out there. I appreciate that. Yeah. Well, I'm going to end this right now. thanks for joining me. That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Richard Jefferson for joining the show. As always, you can download archived episodes on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, post a comment, leave a rating. You know I appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.